Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Jeremy Riley, thank you for joining me in this interview today. First question, what is it about me that makes you so horny?
Nipple hair.
Thank you. I have a lot of it. If I was to get a tattoo, where should I put it?
Sean's butt.
On her penis!
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On this week's episode, we're going to learn more about the Wasatch Roller Derby League. We're going to find out about the Hare Krishnas and their Festival of Colors, and we'll be chatting with local band Uncle Scam, as well as getting a healthy dose of new music. The Wasatch Roller Derby is a flat track derby league in Salt Lake City. The not-for-profit league was founded in 2008 and uses contributions and ticket sales to donate and raise awareness of charities and programs around the state. WRD is a part of the Women's Flat Track Derby Association, and they compete with other teams in the Western Division, including the Ogden-based Junction City Roller Dolls, and games against local recreational leagues like the Red Rockettes and the all-male team, the Uinta Madness. Slug writer Megan Kennedy recently interviewed WRD co-founder Honey the Lunatic.
Tell me a little bit about the Derby as a league. How'd you get started with Medusa? Like, what made you guys actually make this a cohesive thing and try to build it? How many teams do you have, and are you guys all Salt Lake natives?
Wasatch Roller Derby, as I mentioned, was started approximately 4 years ago. Medusa Damage and I had played roller derby together previously, and we focused Wasatch Roller Derby on a couple of things. One, we wanted to really give back to the community. We wanted to give back to charities, so we did our paperwork to become a 501c3 nonprofit organization. So a lot of the money that we make, we give back to various charities within Utah. We also wanted to be a force to be reckoned with. So we wanted to play nationally. We wanted a team that was competitive. And so those were our two main philosophies that we were focusing on, and we just kind of moved forward through that. We currently have four teams in Wasatch Roller Derby. We have two home teams. So when people initially start playing roller derby and they're new to roller derby, they'll play on the home teams. We have the Black Diamond Divas, and we have the Hot Wheelers. Then we have our B-level travel team, which is the Bonneville Bone Crushers, and then we have our A-level travel team, which is the team that is ranked within the Women's Flat Track Derby Association, and that is Midnight Terror.
Coming from the 70s to the modern roller derby, was there a break in roller derby altogether where the sport really wasn't being played and then it resurged, or was it just a slow evolution that was kind of underground?
We had that really big influx of roller derby in the 70s, and then it kind of died out through the 80s, 90s, into 2000, and really you're looking at about 2004, 2005, where we saw the resurgence of it. And also the thing that you'll recognize with modern day roller derby is old roller derby really used to be bank track, and now more modern roller derby is flat track because we have access to that, and it's obviously easier to lay down a rope than to move a gigantic wooden track from place to place.
Is it harder to play in the bank course or the flat course?
I think they're just very different. I mean, even the rules of bank track roller derby and flat track roller derby are different, but you just have to have a different skill set for the different types.
And what's your position on the team, and what does that position entail as far as what's your job for that?
Well, for Wasatch Roller Derby, is I'm the president of Wasatch Roller Derby. I'm the captain of the Midnight Terror, which is our A team that travels nationally and plays in national competitions. And then I'm also the person who will just do everything that nobody else wants to do. So Medusa Damage and I, we started Wasatch Roller Derby. We kind of do everything that needs to be done, but definitely we have committees and other members who do a lot of the inner workings to make this league possible.
Awesome. And on the roller derby team, what are the position names and likes you've got? I know you've got blockers and...
So there's really three main positions as far as who you'll see on the track for roller derby. You will see a pivot. A pivot is designated by wearing a stripe on her helmet. She sets the pace of the pack. You can kind of look at it that way. She is a blocker, but she is a very designated blocker. Then you have three other girls who will be just general blockers, and their job is to either, break up walls, make holes, get the jammer through, block the opposing jammer. And then you have the jammer, of course. She is designated by a star on her helmet. And she is the person who can score all the points for your team.
Has a flux of new interest in roller derby been an all positive one for you, or are you finding that it comes with some sacrifices or negative?
I think the general interest in roller derby has been fantastic. I think that, especially here in Utah, it's just kind of opened up a new thing and world of entertainment for people. We do try to be as family friendly as possible. We want to be that. We want people of, you know, all backgrounds to be able to come and enjoy roller derby, whether you're a grandma, you're a parent, children. We have lots of children that come to our roller derby. We also have a junior league as well. So I think the popularity has been wonderful. We've had to make no sacrifices. We've just grown bigger and bigger and bigger, and we have just started our fourth year of Wasatch Roller Derby. So 4 years ago, it was Medusa Damage and I skating around by ourselves. Wearing blue shirts, and then we kind of grew to about 20 people, and then we grew to about 40 people, and right now we have 60 skaters on our league. We have about 25 dedicated officials. We have volunteers. We have a men's league, and we have a juniors league.
How old do you have to be for the juniors league?
You have to be from 6 to 17, and then there's two divisions within that. So there's the younger division, and there's the older division.
That's awesome. And now on the officiating, how much training do they have to go through to become like a referee or an officiator for that?
So there's a lot of different positions there, too. There's people who just work the penalty box. Mm-hmm. Takes almost no training at all. There's people who work the whiteboards, and you have to learn what the calls are, what the plays are, and what hand signals are. And then there's obviously our on-skate officials or referees who they have really, really hard jobs. I've tried to referee before, and they have to do so many things all at once. It was way more difficult than actually playing roller derby, by all means.
So roller derby's gotten a lot bigger in the past few years, but there's a lot of folks out there that are still unfamiliar with the sport or think it's a lot more violent than it actually is. So can you just give us a quick run through the game, and on average, violence-wise, are you guys looking at injuries every game, or are you looking at that being a misconception?
So when you look at modern-day roller derby, what you have is five girls on the track from each team at one time, and they're playing offense and defense simultaneously. It is a full contact sport. We do wear full protective gear, including helmets, wrist guards, elbow pads, knee pads, mouth guards. Injuries do happen, but they're not happening frequently. They're happening as much as you would see in football. Any other full contact sport can kind of go along with the same lines as roller derby. We don't try to be violent. The point isn't violence necessarily. It's just really looking at, you got to get that girl out of your way, and if you can either move her out or hit her down, that's what you're going to want to do.
So it's definitely more, you're not necessarily trying to tackle, it's just a byproduct of the good blocking, as it were.
Exactly. I mean, it's a really strategically intense sport. We're not out there clotheslining people like what you would see in the roller derbies of the 70s. Every single thing we do has a purpose to it. It can be difficult, though, if you're not really familiar with the rules of roller derby.
How often do you guys travel?
So we travel typically like 5 to 6 times a year, and then we pay for all of it out of our own pockets. Mm-hmm. We were in Eugene, Oregon a few weeks ago. We played 3 games up in Eugene at a tournament. We have other teams come here in Salt Lake. We're planning on traveling to Los Angeles this year. We're traveling to Santa Cruz. We're traveling to San Jose, and then we'll go up to Boise as well.
Wonderful. Is there a championship or a playoff style games at the end of your season? Like, how is your season set up, or is there any sort of trophy you guys are winning or anything like that yet?
No, Wasatch Roller Derby isn't really set up in that way. We don't have a championship within our own league because we are one league. We are competitive on the track with one another, but we're out there having fun, learning roller derby, giving back to charities, building our skills so everybody can one day play at that higher level so we can be competitive nationally, mm-hmm. not just within our own hometown.
And speaking of your charities, tell me more about the organizations that you do sponsor that money. Where is it going? What's your favorite charities to sponsor? And like, have you done any special events?
Our events are always playing roller derby. That's what Wasatch Roller Derby does. So we don't really do any special events. We have actually helped out with various charities. We helped Spy Hop. We did some stuff with them where we went out and we went to one of their events. events, and we were just representing as Wasatch Roller Derby and just kind of did some volunteer time for them. This year, our charities are Camp Hobie, Youth Link, and the Humane Society. And then every single year, at the end of the year in December, we do a drive for South Valley Sanctuary, which is a domestic violence shelter. And we've helped so many various charities in the past. We've helped the American Diabetic Association. We have helped Primary Children's, Huntsman Cancer Institute. And there are so many different charities that we have given money to. And the charities typically just give the money to whatever their focus is. So whether it's focusing on finding cures for cancer or just paying for supplies that they need, they have the ability to do whatever they need to with the money.
That's wonderful. And do you have a figure how much you guys have donated to date?
I know that we have donated probably pretty close to $10,000.
Incredible. That's awesome.
We donate, so for all of our charity events, we donate 40% of our net proceeds.
Wonderful.
So it's not like we're donating $100. We're donating thousands of dollars to charity.
That's wonderful. The girls that are interested in learning roller derby or joining and volunteering, maybe trying out those difficult ref jobs, how can they do that if they want to join and are unfamiliar with the sport?
If you want just more information on roller derby or on Wasatch Roller Derby, you can go to wasatchrollerderby.com. On there, there's contact information if you want to contact us for various things. If you want to just come and volunteer, like, I can't skate, I can't do any of those things, but I just want to be part of it, we have positions for you. You want to become an official, we have positions for you. If you want to learn how to play roller derby, we actually have a beginner class every Tuesday night where you can come and learn how to skate and learn how to play roller derby. And then we have minimum skills you have to pass, and once you pass those minimum skills, then you can have the opportunity to join the rest of the league and be in regular practice. So we definitely have ins for every single person who wants to be involved in roller derby in Utah.
The next WRD game happens this Saturday, March 24th, when WRD League team the Bonneville Bone Crushers go against the Magic City Rollers from Billings, Montana. The event is going to take place at the Derby Depot at 1415 South 700 West in Salt Lake City. Tickets are only $15. Kids 5 and under get in free. Doors open at 6. Game starts at 7. For more info on WRD, including tickets, team profiles, charities, and more, visit their website at wasatchrollerderby.com. Shoo Shoo are an experimental alt-rock duo from San Jose, California. They started in 2002, the brainchild of singer-songwriter Jamie Stewart, with a frequently changing line of bandmates over the past decade. Stewart is currently working with keyboardist Angela Seo, and the duo released their latest album, Always, back on March 6th. Here's High from their new album.
Say hi. If you're alone tonight, say hi. You
That was High from Shushu's latest album, Always. The band are set to kick off a North American tour starting on May 1st with a stop in Salt Lake City on May 24th at the Urban Lounge. For more info on the band, check out their website at xiuxiu.org. The Sri Sri Radha Krishna Temple was built in 1998 in Spanish Fork, Utah. It was built to help the efforts of ISKCON members enhancing awareness of their religion and Indian culture to the Western world. The temple's founding and construction was mainly due to the work of Charu Das and his activity with ISKCON, which is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The temple attracts thousands of people every year through events and the simple curiosity to check out the temple and its surroundings. One of the temple's biggest events is the Holi Festival of Colors, where patrons buy different colors of chalk to throw at a replica of Holika and help teach Hindu messages. I recently spoke with Charu Das about the festival and his temple.
I just wanted to know, how does a kid from New Jersey end up a devotee of Krishna, if you could encapsulate that in like 30 seconds for us?
Pennsylvania born, originally. It was in Australia in 1970. Had already been to India searching for self-realization. Came up kind of empty there, and ironically met one of the first missionaries in Sydney, Australia. And there was a temple that had just been established around the corner from where my wife and I were staying. And we enjoyed the food and the philosophy. And when it was time to leave and continue our travels, we found that we couldn't do it. We actually had lost our taste for wandering footloose and fancy-free around the world and decided it was time to commit ourselves to a higher cause.
You did spend some time in New Jersey, right? You went to school there?
Yeah, I went to school in New Jersey. Yeah, 4 years at a prep school there.
And did anything that you learned there prepare you for your world as you entered a more religious life?
It was interesting because it was a very expensive prep school right up there with Andover and Exeter. We had chapel every day before we went to classes, 15, 20 minutes. We had services on Sundays. Coat and ties were required at all times. We had a lot of the top preachers from Harvard and Yale, Princeton and all. They would rotate regularly through our campus. But none of it seemed to take with me. I can't recall anything that I ever heard during all those years, and even my previous years growing up in an Episcopalian family. But when I met the first devotee, it might have been because he was living, he was walking the talk, you know. It might have also been because he wasn't smoking or drinking or promiscuous or even eating meat. It might have been that his words had more effect on me. But yeah, the first words he said to me is, love of God is a seed within everyone's heart. It's just that with all our focus in the Western world and the externals, we haven't tapped into the spiritual mechanics of causing that seed of love of God to grow and produce fruit. And he said that process was chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare, which are the names of God. And the upcoming Festival of Colors, I mean, it's called the Festival of Colors. That's the pretext. It's a spring event, which has been celebrated annually every year in India for thousands of years. But really for us, the reason that we sponsor the festival, what gives us delight, is the fact that we chant. You know, we have five or six bands, good bands, and they chant Hare Krishna, and thousands of kids dance to the names of God for up to 8-10 hours. And that's why I do what I do, you know. That's what gets me going. That's what makes my day, week, month, year.
So the people at home or the people listening can understand more fully the nature of your religion. And what would you describe that to be?
People often ask, you know, what's your relation with Hinduism? And we're followers of the Bhagavad Gita, which was spoken by Krishna 5,000 years ago in Sanskrit. And when you translate the Sanskrit from the English, Gita means song and Bhagavad is God. So it's a song of God. It's 700 verses divided into 18 chapters, and in there you find all your core concepts of karma, yoga, vegetarianism, dharma, sense of duty, reincarnation. One thing you won't find in the whole 700 verses of Bhagavad Gita is you won't find the word Hindu, because it's not ultimately sectarian or denominational. It has to do with the relationship of the soul with God. And so, as Emerson described the Gita after having read it, it's the perennial philosophy. That's why I'm a devotee, because I'm not interested, you know, in being Hindu or Muslim, Christian. I'm not interested in lining myself up with any particular sect or denomination. But the principle of chanting any bona fide name of God is a universal principle. And I think any sincere spiritual aspirant would have no objection to sit down with people of any persuasion, any ethnicity, any religious institution, and chanting names of God. That practice is incidentally called kirtan, K-I-R-T-A-N, and that's becoming more and more popular nowadays. Yoga studios are incorporating it. We have kirtan, you know, for days for the whole the entirety of the festival, and people resonate to it. People enjoy it, and they should, because it's the soul of reaching out to God.
How does that sort of philosophy fit into the Holi Festival? Where did it originate? Can you give us a little backstory and then let us know how you celebrate it?
Originally, it was a spring festival, and, you know, in the old days, people would ground up flower petals and throw them on each other. In India, where it's a temperate climate, they could also use water as a delivery system, you know, through syringes and water balloons, and still do to this day. But we don't want anyone to catch cold at our event or on our property, so we just restrict it to dry. And we can't afford to use ground-up flower petals, but the bags of powder that we import from India are organic. They're made of cornstarch, organic dyes. They're perfumed. They're perfectly safe. Of course, you don't want any foreign object in your eyes or your lungs, so we caution people not to throw directly into the eyes and the lungs. But it represents the coming of spring with all of its colors and all of its fragrances. It represents rebirth after the starkness and bleariness of winter. And Lord Krishna himself used to observe it when he was on the planet over 5,000 years ago. So we have a number of festivals down here and in our newly acquired property in Salt Lake. But the one that I enjoy organizing the most is this one, because not only is it the biggest, but I feel like I'm actually following directly in the footsteps of God as he organized the very same event.
Now, when you're in Spanish Fork, there's a lot of things you recognize from the state of Utah, Mormon temples, suburbs, and things like that. Some people might think it's odd to see the kind of architecture that you have down there. How do you find having a Krishna temple in a predominantly Mormon county to be?
It should have never been from all sort of research points of view. I mean, there are many books now written about how to plant a church. I don't know if they were written when we first came in 82, but some of the guidelines, if you're going to plant a church, are you have to have a constituency, you have to have donors, you have to have financiers. They also know now that 90% of your people that attend your church are going to come within 12 miles of where the church is located. And the first thing that someone does before they plant a church is they go around and they interview, knocking on doors, as many people within 12 miles as they can. And if there's more than 60% of the people who are uncommitted to a particular church, then you have a fairly good chance, if you do things right, of being successful. Well, of course, you've already figured out that none of those criterions was even remotely close to coming into existence. We kind of just came here, fools rush in, we're wise and feel to tread. No money, no constituency, no donors. 90% of the people in Utah County are Mormons, and so it shouldn't be here. And the fact that it is here works to advantage, because it's an attractive feature. I mean, it's so different and so unique that people actually come from out of state, people come off the freeway, and we have about 50 or 60,000 visitors a year, aside from the other up to 100,000 people that come for festivals.
How do you feel about people that don't have the same belief system as you participating in your celebrations and festivals?
I'm delighted. I'm absolutely delighted. I mean, we couldn't have persisted 30-plus years here if we had been hardline, you know, missionary, you know, people looking to convert people. I mean, we recognize from day one that most people are not going to be interested in the worship per se, and that's been our strategy, to run our mission as a cultural resource, as a performing arts center, so that everyone could find something that they would enjoy, whether it be dance or drama or music or food. And it's been successful. Not only has the Spanish Fork Temple come up and become a world-class building and been patronized by lots and lots of tourists and festival goers, but we've expanded to Salt Lake within this last year, and hopefully we can expand further using the same principle of cultural conquest, you might say.
You mentioned you have yoga classes and lifestyle courses at your Lotus Temple down in Spanish Fork. Do you have the same kind of classes in Salt Lake City as well?
Yeah, we have yoga classes every day, except Sunday at 6 to 7:30. We have classes on the Bhagavad Gita at 7:30 up there. We have Sunday services at 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. And they also have Saturday evening services at 7. And we have some of our festivals up there. We just had the Shivaratri Festival last Saturday. We had about 500-600 people came for that. It was very successful.
Now, do you do Ashtanga yoga any location of yours?
There are different teachers, different nights of the week. There is one night, I'm not sure which night it is, up in Salt Lake City, where they do have an Ashtanga yoga teacher. They also have Vinyasa, they have Kundalini. Depending on what night it is and what teacher, you get a variety.
Right, I'd heard that that was one of the only places around you can even study that style of yoga, which I thought was really interesting. And it's donation-based. You guys aren't trying to make a lot of money off this.
The main reason is that we just want the teachers, you know, they're giving their time and their expertise, and we would hope that the students would want to reimburse them for their time. Otherwise, we're not overly concerned about the financial part of it. Shortly after we got the temple in Salt Lake in July, we sponsored the Great Salt Lake Yoga Fest. Over Labor Day weekend, just threw the whole thing together. It was packed. We had three rooms, including the large auditorium. 300 people paid $30 for multiple entry passes. We had 20 teachers, about 10 of whom came at their own expense from Texas and Boston and Florida. And it was a huge success, and we plan to repeat the same next Labor Day weekend, 2012.
What are those classes specifically designed for?
You know, our tradition is 5,000 years old. I don't know of any religious or spiritual tradition that has credentials that we do in the antiquity. Because our foundational principle is chanting and dancing, there may be a tendency to think that it's sentimentally based, but there's a huge literature, there's a huge philosophy, there's an incredible intellectual power behind it, hundreds and hundreds of books, different facets of the culture, the worship of Tulsi, the offering of food, the prasadam, the tilak that one marks on the body on, the practice of japa, chanting on beads, kirtan, they're, you know, setting up a home altar, ekadasis, 2 days fasting a month. There's probably about 60 or 70 distinct topics that I have PowerPoints for, and should anyone want to get into the nuts and bolts of the philosophy, they're welcome to do that. And those classes are for serious people who are seriously inquisitive. You know, they might use it as a complement to a course at the university and so on and so forth. For getting their kids, I would suggest, if you want something that we snatch up your kids, probably better would be the Saturday night or Sunday morning programs, because those are seeker-friendly, they're very topical, they're very relevant, how to break bad habits, how to manage your mouth, how to stop complaining, how to reduce stress in your life. So lifestyle classes are more for serious, mature people, I think.
The 2012 Holi Festival of Colors will happen this Saturday, March 24th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Sunday, March 25th from noon to 4. The Krishna Temple is located at 8625 South State Road in Spanish Fork. For more info on the festival and the temple, visit them online at utahkrishnas.org. It's time once more for our weekly daily calendar rundown. I'm joined today by editorial assistant Esther Moronio. Hey, Esther.
Hey, JP.
Thanks for that excitement as usual. Let's jump right into the events. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, Tuesday, March 20th, White Rabbits and Gull are going to be playing at Urban. Have you ever had a chance to see the White Rabbits before?
I haven't. Should I go see them?
Yeah, they're really good.
Cool.
You know anything about this Gull band, this Gull character?
Yeah, he's a street performer, kind of a one-man band, plays the drums and the guitar and like some other instruments all by himself, and wears a mask while he plays, so...
Don't we all? Sorry. Okay. So let's skip to Thursday. By the way, that show sounds really exciting, White Rabbits and Gull. If you haven't checked out the White Rabbits before, do that. Thursday, March 22nd, Blitz and Trapper and Parson Redheads are going to be at the State Room. I've seen Blitz and Trapper. It's a great show.
Oh, yeah, they get a lot of hype. So they do glad that they live up to it.
They do, yeah. Well, it's a good live performance considering how they record. So if you like that, if you like Blitz and Trapper, you'll like that. I don't know if I'm going to make it to it. What about you? Are you going to check it out?
Maybe. I'm not super into alt country, but I don't know. Maybe I'll go see what all the fuss is about.
Are you more into Deicide or Jungle Rot or Abigail Williams or Lecherous Nocturne?
Maybe.
Hey, that sounds like a bill. They're coming to the complex. It's death metal, in case you didn't get it from all those names, Friday, March 23rd.
Cool. I bet our Napalm Flesh guys will be pretty stoked about that show.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Is Edward Sharpmore your speed in his Magnetic Zeros at Kingsbury?
I think so. I actually missed his performance at Twilight, though.
Well, he's going to be on that date as well, Friday, March 23rd. They did a pretty good job at Twilight. Considering how big the crowd was, yeah, and the sound there is always nice.
Mm-hmm. That's probably something that I'll go check out for sure.
And there's something going on in Ogden. Why don't you tell us what's going on that same day, Friday?
Man, Friday is a popular day for music this week.
Go big.
So at Mojo's, Andrew Jackson Jihad and Laura Stevenson and the Cans are playing. And Andrew Jackson Jihad is a kind of a folk punk rock band. And we actually have a feature on them in this month's issue and with some pretty funny photos, so you should definitely check out that in our magazine. On Saturday, March 24th, we'd like to wish one of our distro drivers, Joe Jukes, a happy birthday. JP?
Happy birthday, Joe Jukes! And also that day, why don't you tell people what nerdiness is going on?
Well, I mean, they came up with a pretty creative title for this. SLC Nerd is happening at the complex. And basically what's going on is there's a bunch of nerdy bands playing and some tabletop gaming like Magic the Gathering and things like that. And a costume contest. So if you are a geek or a nerd or, you know, just really into Magic the Gathering.
I see you looking at me, maybe accusatorily.
Accusatorily?
I'm kind of nerdy, but Ren Fairs are more my speed.
Okay.
So, you know, suiting up, it's a plate armor, or mail as we call it. I'm not going to get into that, but that's more one of them.
Yeah. Well, there's no judgment here. We love nerds and geeks.
It's cool now.
It is.
That's the word on the street.
Yeah.
They got their fucking movies and what have yous.
It is.
Comic books.
So go check that out. There should be some good live music for sure.
And Sunday, March 25th, happy birthday to Sam. He's our action sports writer and photographer.
Yeah, Sam Milianta, happy birthday.
That's what I'm talking about, is there. As usual, we've got an iPod and iPhone app. I guess if you have a really cool iPod, you can get it on it. But mainly it's the iPhone app. You can call us from the app. You can listen to our show on that. You can also get access to all our issues. It's our Slug app in general, and then there's also some Slug Soundwaves features on there.
It's a pretty cool feature.
And where else can we find the daily calendar, though? I feel like there's a place we could find it.
Yeah. Well, if you're one of those, you know, like, need a touch and need to, like, really pick something up and read it type of person.
Yeah. I've heard of those people, yeah.
Yeah. You can actually find our daily calendar in the back of the physical magazine. All the dates are there. Just pick it up any place cool, and you'll know what's going on around town. Or you can go to our website.
Thank you, slugmag.com.
Yep.
And thanks as usual, Esther. Great job on the weekly daily calendar rundown.
Thank you, JP.
Uncle Scam is an indie rock band based out of Salt Lake City. They formed in 2009 and released several EPs and then a debut full-length, Redneck Funeral, in 2010. They then released their sophomore album, Heavy Cream, in August of 2011, but differences in opinions forced a split, leaving guitarist Rafi Shahinian and Isha B to continue on as a duo. Since that time, they've been releasing singles exclusively on their website for $1 each. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I recently went to the website, nice. And I heard a rendition of a song called The Uncle Scam Bump. It sounded like it had something to do with the Colbert Report. Please explain.
Well, I love Stephen Colbert, we wrote that song a while back. It's actually about a year old or so.
That's right.
And we were determined to make a video when we released the single this last Friday, so.
We animated it ourselves. We spent many, many hours drinking, smoking, eating candy. While we animated it together.
Is that how the recording process goes, too?
Yeah, right?
I would say the recording process is more smooth because you get, like, 3 minutes worth of music in 3 minutes instead of, like, 10 seconds for an hour, so.
And everyone out there is probably wondering what kind of candy. I mean, I am.
Chocolate.
Okay.
I like Haribo.
Haribo, the gummies.
Yep.
Of course. Well, I'm glad to know you guys are fans of the Rapport. Who isn't, right?
Yeah, for sure.
As your Twitter profile states, Uncle Scam has been rocking the SLC live music scene, playing everywhere, putting out funky jams, clever lyrics, and killer shows. I've long wondered this about that phrase. What makes a jam funkier than other jams?
did we make a comparison? Wait a minute.
You just said that you had funky jams.
Yeah, well, I don't think that that means that we're funkier than other jams, though. It just means we're funky.
It's just, I guess, really, we just like to put a lot of awesome adjectives. It's like, what are you doing? We're just jamming, man. You know?
Thank you for that dance, by the way. Yeah. That was very good.
I'm showing the funk in here.
And speaking of, you're known for a particular style of stage presence. You wear wigs and couture, etc. Can you tell us what that means to your overall experience as a singer and how the crowd reacts to that?
Yeah, well, I think I'm definitely asking a question. I think it's interesting to see how people react differently to different personas. That's a big fun thing for me. I think that it's interesting depending on your crowd what kind of response you get.
Sure.
Because we had a show recently where the chicks were, all of the ladies were super, it was at the art show. It was at the Submerged Art Show, and there was a bunch of girls that came up and were loving on it. And then, of course, there's other times where for some reason it's all guys that love it. And maybe it has something to do with the different personas. You know what I mean? That's what makes it interesting.
How many different wigs do you own?
And you know what? I own at least a dozen. You'd be happy to know that they've been reappropriated and recycled. I may or may not have gotten them from a certain retail location that was getting rid of the mannequin wigs at the time, and I didn't think that those could be thrown in the trash.
Mm-mm. Definitely not.
Not when there's a beautiful bald head that could be decorated with it. Am I wrong?
No, you're quite correct.
Thank you very much.
And you do keep the head shaved so you can wear different wigs, or is that just the thing overall?
Do you know what? I did it last year for my birthday, and I didn't actually expect to like it as much as I did, and I just haven't wanted to change it since then, so.
I've done the shaved head thing myself, and it's maintenance-free. You probably found that
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I love it.
It's glorious, isn't it?
Your mane is gorgeous, though, so I can understand why you go ahead and let the locks flow.
Yeah, these are going to go to 3 feet or more. We'll see.
Nice. I don't know. Well, when you get there, remember to donate, because when I cut my hair short, it was 22 inches, and that's 2 wigs, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 2 wigs for kids.
Wigs for kids?
Yeah.
Is that a real organization?
Well, you know, you send them to the place that makes the wigs for serious moment, kids who have cancer.
It's like Locks of Love.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you for noting the serious moment.
Thank you very much.
I didn't know. I don't know the difference. I don't know the line. Speaking of awkward things, there's two people in the band. There used to be more. How is the ship easier or harder to run these days?
Easier.
It's so much
inevitably
fun. And it's probably just so much fun because Rafi and I are very good friends, obviously. We've known each other for over 12 years.
Yeah, since 97 or something.
Yeah, so we're buddies, and you know, we've learned how to work together in a lot of ways, and so making music together is great, and then of course we're making the animation together and performing shows together. We get a lot of compliments on our energy together, so I think we have a lot of charisma between the two of us, and we have a lot of fun with that, so.
I mean, I've always thought there's always benefits, but being on the same train with people for like 4 to 5 years, it's always hard to keep your same path
goals
going.
And perspective, yeah.
And so it's been really nice too, because now our policy is we don't say no. So if someone calls us up for a show or something,
we're gonna play the show. We're gonna do the gig.
We're gonna always say yes whenever we can. So.
Yeah.
And I've seen you as a full band before. How's the experience different now? Do you play from a laptop? Do you have some studio type like session musicians come in, or how does that work?
You know what? It is all done on the laptop. Our session drummer has offered it a couple times, and we have been hit up by some bassists too. But it we
to come
do
and
on
play
laptop.
Live with us. But yeah, we do play from backing tracks that we record live in the studio. So this new album that we did, Uncle Scam Fly Free, we did in the studio. We recorded it, and then we used the same tracks that we recorded for the album for the drums and the bass when we play live. We are planning to do some future music with electronic tracks and with out drum and bass tracks. We also had one of the songs at the very end of the album, Wasted, that doesn't have drum or bass tracks on it. It's kind of an introduction to the guitar-only music that we're experimenting with.
For sure.
I always like to see how people with different amounts of people in the band play. Mm-hmm. You know, that's cool.
Yeah.
Dude, when I see like 10 pieces, I always wonder, how in the hell do you guys get together on the same time to even practice?
That's amazing.
Insane.
Exactly. So. Like Wanagani, amazing.
Awesome
A
band.
Community, totally.
Yeah.
Now, you guys are releasing singles now, kind of, for $1. Now you've got this album I see here. What do you think is the future of the music distribution as you guys see it? How are you going to do that?
Well, we definitely want to move forward with, you know, digital distribution, because that's what the industry has been doing for a while anyway. So, of course, you always want to have all of your stuff available online. I think you still have to have something physical that you can give to people to promote yourself. Anybody that you want to have check it out, like a magazine to do a review on it or something. something like that. I think it's good to have a physical piece. And on top of that, you always want to make sure that you have art that goes with it, some other kind of level of art. And so it's either way, if we release it online or as a physical album, we'll always have art that goes with the singles or with the cover, because that's a big piece of who we've always been, is kind of Definitely. Mixing together with other forms of art, other dancers or...
Who did the design? I see this is kind of like maybe a street art motif. It's on a brick from what I'm seeing on the cover of the album here.
Yeah, this is a compilation piece on mm-hmm. the cover. We used each of these individually. They're the titles of the songs that are on the album. And we used them all individually when we were releasing the singles. And then we put it together to form the complete piece. And it was a local artist. She's kind of underground, but it's the Ginger Ninja, and she did all of the work for us. So it's super fun to be able to work with just the local artistic community, because we have so much great art and music and performers. And
why not combine it together?
Absolutely.
For sure.
Well, what's next for you guys, musically speaking?
Big plans, actually, yeah. We're headed back to the studio tomorrow. I feel like I get to say that often, which is fun. So we're finishing up 15 new tracks that we just did mm-hmm. for our project Minx, and that's the future of what Rafi and I are going to be doing.
Yeah, we'll definitely start pursuing the Minx project. We got about 15 guitar vocal only tracks, and we're going to go back in the studio in a couple weeks, and we got 15 other tracks that we're pretty much trying to just go into each genre. Like, we have one hip-hop
Explore.
Song, one rock song, and just kind of some funky stuff
going
on.
Some electronic stuff.
So we're super stoked.
Different styles of vocals and instrumentation.
Where's the studio you guys are talking about?
It's SIS Records. It's with our buddy Toby.
Toby Celiaz.
Yeah, he's been around. We do lots. I pretty much done work with him since 2000.
He helped us put together the pieces for the Bump video
mm-hmm,
as well.
Definitely.
I'm looking at the back of the album now, and this looks like a really uncomfortable getup you're in. Can I call it a getup? What the hell is this?
You know what? That is a dress that I made, and it's lovely. It's very slinky.
It's delightful, but it looks like you have to literally slink into it.
Slinky, slinky.
What material is that? Vinyl?
It's not. It's very soft. You know what? I'm going to have to show you sometime, because it's nice and soft and slinky and delicious.
It sounds delightful.
Thank you.
Can you guys talk a little bit about recording The Hard Way?
The Hard Way, pretty much what I did, I rehearsed with the session drummer a couple times, and I also let him hear the track before. And first I record the guitar. Then we went over and I laid the bass tracks, and pretty much we kind of did about two takes for each song to find the one we liked the most. He actually added that song wasn't the way it sounded originally, and he added some flavor to that.
Who,
I really liked.
Our drummer?
Yeah, Tracy. Yeah. Tracy Nielsen.
Hey, thanks a lot for stopping by, guys. I'm going to listen to the new album. I really enjoyed that Bump song. I'm glad to see it's on here, and we'll check in with you guys in the future. Where can we find more information about you folks?
You go UncleScamRocks.com, and that gives links to our YouTube, Facebook, MySpace, iTunes, Amazon. So that's where I'd go, UncleScamRocks.com.
Cool. Thanks for joining me, Rafi
Thank
and Aisha.
Thank you.
Well, from your latest album, here's the single, The Hard Way.
Been living my life all broken and bruised, a shadow of being alone and abused. Been keeping myself when no one can offend, alone in the dark. Just a girl, and I know how they talk, and I know what they
That was Uncle Scam from their latest album, Fly Free. That song was called The Hard Way. To see live performances and listen to new tracks, check out the Uncle Scam Rocks channel on YouTube. And for more info on the band, visit them at their website, UncleScamRocks.com. Thanks for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Do you like sushi? Do you have a favorite joint that you'd like Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp to review in our next Yelp segment? Send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we may just play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art designed by T-Done and technical design by Kate O'Connor. Next week, we're all really excited about the Slug team going down to South by Southwest. They'll be coming back and giving us a recap on all the parties, the concerts, the shows, the experience in general. So make sure you listen into that. Thanks for listening as usual. We'll see you next week.